I'm Brandon Isle with BYU Idaho Radio, and joining me over Zoom is Chairwoman Dorothy Moon. She's the chairwoman of the Idaho GOP. Thanks for joining me today.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Now, first of all, let's just get to know you a little bit. Tell me about you and how you came to be chairwoman of the Idaho GOP.
All right. Well, it's been a little bit of a journey. So I started as a legislator. I was actually a legislative district chair for District 8. And before the redistricting, that included Lemhi, Custer County, Boise County, Valley County, and Gem County, which makes up about 16,000 square miles. So it was the largest district in the entire state. So it's also the prettiest one. So I had a lot of pretty driving and a lot of great rural people that I represented. I had that job for 6 years after being legislative district chair for two, and I served until end of 2022. And I really enjoyed representing loggers, miners, ranchers. My husband and I piddle around with gold mining as well and logging. So these were people I loved to represent. After my 6th year, I decided to run for Secretary of State after the 2020 election and a lot of the election integrity concerns. I saw where we could do a lot better in Idaho, and I ran. And I lost by a few thousand votes, so it was a pretty close race, despite the fact that it was a three-way race. And I was ready to go home, go gold mining, go logging. And I decided that after a lot of encouragement from folks like current Attorney General Raul Labrador, and other legislative district and region chairs, and just the grassroots, they wanted me to run for chair of the Republican Party. They didn't like the direction it had gone under my predecessor. And it's always a back and forth. It's like the pendulum swings back and forth in the party. But the grassroots have really felt like their voice wasn't being heard. And I'm a grassroots gal. So that's how I wound up in this position. In June, they will reelect a new chair or me. And I am committed to run for this position again. We've made some great headway in representing the grassroots and providing a lot of services to the counties when it comes down to Republican issues and promotions. So that's kind of where we're at. And it's been a tough job. The hardest thing I've ever done is an unpaid position. So donor money does not go toward this position at all. I've been up here for 4 months now, since December 29th. I like being up here during session to track the bills that the State Central Committee have voted on, resolutions they'd like to see bills passed, kind of like one bill or one resolution that came forward was on taking federal funding that cities could dictate to private property landowners and renters. Whether they had to rent to certain population of people. And so this had to deal with federal Section 8 housing. This is one of the resolutions that actually came up. They shouldn't we have we feel very strongly about private property rights, and no city should be telling you who you have to rent to. So that did pass. So that was a great success. We had other successes, but that was a big one. And anyway, the grassroots now have a voice in the State Central Committee. They can come in and say what concerns them, and can we get a bill to fix this issue? Kind of like giving driver's license out to illegals coming into this state. That's a big issue with the State Central Committee. And so these are the kind of things that they write resolutions for. Fighting fentanyl, that was another one. So these are the bills that actually were heard and passed. And thanks to the Idaho GOP grassroots, a lot of them had a lot of light shining on them to make sure they would advance to the governor's desk.
Yeah, your work, you work closely with the legislatures, as you mentioned. How would you characterize this last session, the
Sorry.
2024 Idaho session?
I would characterize it that the Democrats had a pretty good year. They had a very good year. We seem to have a problem with a lot of Republican legislators joining with the Democrats to bring about the Democrat values. One good example, a fast one, is the fact that Senator Melissa Wintrow, she wanted to expand, a Democrat, has been wanting to expand contraception being available for 6 months instead of 3 months. And she's brought it for 6 years, and by golly, some of our Republicans jumped on board to make sure insurance companies paid for that extra 3 months, 6 months in one block. And I guess the thing is that it, you know, that's going to increase insurance rates for a lot of people. That now that we're covering that for 6 months, and just interesting that we had a lot of our folks, supposed Republicans, jumping on board with the Democrats, but also on a lot of other bills as well, not just that one.
Yeah, you mentioned the phrase supposed Republicans, and I know in the last year there have been some changes to the Republican Party where you if the party feels they're not quite there yet, that some things can happen. Can you walk me through what's actually happening and why that change was made?
Sure. And that happened last summer at our summer convention. And mind you, those are not my resolutions or rule changes that come forward. I just run the meetings. Literally, the county central committees, which there's 44 counties in this state, each one after these precinct committee races that we have in May, on May 21st, they will get together and put in a chairman and a state committee man, state committee woman, and a youth committee person. All 44 counties have four representatives on the state central committee, and then the legislative district chairs as well. So that's very important. So like in District 8, where I live, there's four counties now. After the redistricting, we just have Custer, Valley, Boise. So I lost Jim and we lost Limhi. But now we've got Elmore. So we have four counties within our legislative district. So that seat will also be voted in the reorganizational meetings after the May 21st deadline. So now let's back up to the group that we met with in Challis for the summer meeting and for the two winter meetings that are before and after. Those meetings, that's where they bring up rule changes or resolutions. The issue that was at hand was that we have a lot of people who are voting worse than the Democrats, not only on the Idaho Freedom Foundation scale, but there's other different platforms, such as the Institute for Legislative Analysis. This is a group, they are not affiliated with Republican or Democrat, but they will go through and look at our platform and see whether legislators are voting contrary to that platform, like they're voting for more taxes, like they're voting for more regulations, like they're voting for not sending a resolution to the Congress to tell them we're sick of what's happening at the border and we need to go after President Biden for that policy. We had a lot of Republicans not sign on to that, to close the border. You can't make this stuff up. So what had happened is that at that meeting during the summer, the 229 members of the State Central Committee voted that we have to have a mechanism to hold legislators' feet to the fire. So it's not the state Republican Party, it's the counties. I just told you where the chair, state committee man, woman, and the youth person are the ones on that State Central Committee, but it's the precinct committee men that have been voted in to represent all of these 900 plus precincts around the state. To get together and say, hey, you know what? We really like you, Senator. We really like you, Representative, but holy cow, why do you want to keep porn in the libraries? Okay, these are the kinds of questions I think citizens have a right to ask. Now, in the press, this has been portrayed as tribunals, what else? All kinds of horrific names. I don't think that's it at all. The intent was to have them come in and say, well, why, give us your reasoning as to why you voted to keep these inappropriate books in libraries that kids can just walk right up and grab. Just explain it to us. Maybe, you know, maybe have a good reason. And a lot of them have. Now, a lot of representatives have been censured. This is not a new thing. This actually happened before this change came about at the Challis summer meeting. But there has to be a way to address these issues. And I know we're going to talk about the initiative here in a minute, but that's a huge issue. And we have Republicans actually carrying the petition for the Democrats to get signatures. I'm not making this up, Brandon. This is for real. So what do we do when we have Republicans who are doing the dirty work for the Democrats to ruin our state? We need a mechanism, and this was one of the tools that the State Central Committee came up with.
Yeah, we'll get to the open primaries in a moment, but first let's talk about the presidential primary. So
Sure.
last year, legislature passes a bill and it doesn't quite talk about when to have that primary. And so you came up with this caucus. that was held, what was it, March 2nd?
Yes.
And so this was for the president, where there were a lot of Republican candidates. And then by the time even March 2nd came around, there weren't very many left in the race.
Right.
How would you call this a success? And kind of talk about why people are saying it's not a success.
Okay, well, first of all, let's talk about how we got to this that position of having the caucus. So last year, you're correct, HB 138, a House bill, was brought forward by our Secretary of State, brand new Secretary of State, and in it, he wanted to move the primary from March and put it into May 21st this year, and have our presidential primary then. It was Dustin Manwaring who carried the bill. And I reached out to the Secretary of State and wanted to know how come the State Central Committee, which meets in January, the first weekend of January, we're at the Riverside Inn. No one ever came and asked the State Central Committee, hey, how do you feel about us moving your presidential primary all the way down to May? We were not even asked, which is unfortunate because if you hear that word stakeholder, which I absolutely hate, we are the primary stakeholder in the Republican Party. We are the ones who should be weighing in on this issue or asked, how could we move it to where we could all be happy? And that wasn't even an option. So the bill was brought forward in February. I understood it was going to be in March, but it moved on a fast track. The legislators didn't even know. I didn't even know it. I thought it was going to be run in March, the beginning of March, because I was actually, Brandon, trying to move our presidential primary up to February. There's four states. I wanted to knock Nevada out. I wanted Idaho to be the conservative Republican state that represents the West. So I was kind of working on that with the RNC, and I told the Secretary of State that in February. And he said he would wait until the 1st of March to see if I have any success. But instead, the bill started moving very quickly. And by the time it got over to the Senate State Affairs, Rod Beck is the county commissioner who happened to be in the meeting. And he said, Secretary of State, I hate to tell you this, but you did not put it in May. You have literally removed our March primary. And in the bill, there is no May, no date, no presidential primary. The senators in that committee knew it and passed it through. And then it went on to the amending orders, which most of us know if you put it to the amending orders that it needs to be pulled down and amended. Instead, they decided to run a trailer bill, which is a tactic that they can use in the legislature, and the trailer bill would have put it in May. At that point, I think most of us knew if the trailer bill failed, excuse me, and there were at least five, six people testifying against it. I was one of them because we hadn't even weighed in yet as a party. So how dare you move it to May with us not weighing in yet? And it failed. The trailer bill failed. The bill that was sitting on the amending order was voted through the Senate. It got to the governor's desk, and the governor signed it into law, a bill that totally annihilated our presidential primary and removed our 32 delegates for our presidential candidate from the scene. So needless to say, it was like, oh boy, have we got a problem. So the Senate and the House could have come back in before October 1. October 1 is the deadline for the RNC to know what every state in the union, how they're addressing a presidential primary caucus or convention, whatever they're doing. And once that is locked in October 1, that's where you're at. You cannot change anything, cannot deviate, waiver, nothing. So we were hoping that the legislature, the House, was intent on putting it back in March. The Senate locked horns with them and said, we're not coming back in for a special session unless you put it in May. And we didn't get to weigh in at all, really, as a party. And so at the caucus was decided in Challis at the summer meeting. Because now we had to come up with a game plan. Session was over in March. No one's even interested in talking about this issue, but we had to be prepared to give the Idaho voters some mechanism to vote in some manner. We talked with the seven attorneys, seven counselors with the RNC. They said, okay, this is your choice, Idaho. You're either going to have a caucus or you're going to have a convention. A caucus would allow many more people to vote. a convention would bring it down to kind of like how I was voted in Twin Falls. There were 700 people there. So this convention would have had about 600 people there because of the number of people that vote on even year races. So anyway, the convention wasn't going to work because that'd only be 700 people. And we wanted a lot more than six to 700 people to vote. So the caucus was decided on, and the rule change in Challis stated either repeal House Bill 138 and give us back our March primary, or the Idaho GOP will caucus. So guess what? We had to caucus, and we did, and we did a great job at it. So up until after October 1, when the plan was submitted, immediately I got in my car. We have 44 counties. We want to have a meeting face to face with everybody and say, this is what we're doing. We will have paper ballots. They're going to be gorgeous. And they were. We're going to have poll books, paper. We're going to vote on paper ballots, and we're going to hand count right in front of the people who are there to vote. And they loved it. So I'm very proud of the fact that we had 210 venues around our 44 counties. Some of them are very large, like in the legislative district in Ada County. There were 18,000 voters. They had a facility that could accommodate about 3,000 voters, and they'd be going in and out very rapidly because we were going to have a firehouse caucus. And a firehouse caucus means just that. You walk in, you watch a couple of videos of the candidates, and then you go and vote. Or if you're in a hurry because you have to get back to work on a Saturday, even though most people traditionally work Monday through Friday, we got beat up for having it on Saturday. That was a great idea. Anyway, on March 2nd, and it also kept us ahead of Super Tuesday. So we were number five in the lineup. So that was fantastic. Then Missouri jumped on as well on to the 2nd of March. So we had our caucus all laid out. It was a lot of work. It was 5 months of intense work in this office. We had at least four people every day working on our poll books. Because some poll books would have multiple precinct locations. Some of them would have one. So it was a lot of work to determine what they wanted to do. So it was up to Bonneville County. Bonneville County, I'm just using them as an example because there were multiple legislative districts there. So each legislative district chairman was running their events, and they could have had 10 events in one legislative district. They could have had two in one. So it was very unique that everybody could do what they were comfortable with. So anyway, the caucus came about on March 2nd. Now, interestingly enough, incumbency is huge, and people love Donald Trump in Idaho, and we have always delivered for Donald Trump. 65% is nothing. I mean, he's always higher. I think he was 68% the first go around. So people want to vote for Donald Trump. I've driven around the state. I've seen the signs. I've seen the flags. And they're pretty. They like the guy. And I do, too. And so anyway, Trump, he was an incumbent. He did not participate in the debates because he didn't need to. And people like what he was doing before Biden took that seat. So that was pretty easy. And we didn't have the, you know, the different candidates that were running. But if you notice, most of them jumped right on the Trump train. And by the time we got to Saturday, it was just to reinforce and to make sure all 32 of our delegates, because Nikki Haley was still in the race. She did not pull out until the next week. So we had a three-way race. Ryan Binkley from Texas was also in that race. He withdrew a couple days before, and then it was a two-man race. And then it was an 85-15 split. So you know what? We had 40,000 people show up. You had snowstorms in eastern Idaho. You had a Rocky Mountain power outage because of the snow. We had the Idaho Press in Boise put out 2 days before the caucus in two periodicals that the caucus started at 1:30 and ended at 3, when everybody's postcard said it started at noon and would go until everybody came in and voted. And we said be there till 1:30. They'd be there till 1:30. So the misinformation campaign was relentless. We even had some Republicans who were putting out caucus chaos mailers. There were three mailers going after me, the Idaho State Central Committee, and the idea that we were having a caucus was unconscionable. No, it wasn't. That was the only way Republicans had an opportunity to vote in this state. And out of the 40,000 people that showed up, they loved it. I have heard nothing but from Boundary County, bordering up there in Canada, everywhere. Pianos were being played in community centers. Some people have tri-tip sliders out in the parking lot. People had cookies and baked goods. People were singing patriotic songs. It was wonderful. And I have heard nothing but good. The only people we heard negative from were people who got to the door after 1:30 in a Boise area location. And I wonder why. We had the postcard sent out.
Let me ask you this. You mentioned 40,000 people were able to participate. The calculations show that's about 6.8%.
Yes, almost 7%.
Yeah, does that worry you at all that only 7% of Republicans were able to participate when traditionally many more are able to do that?
No, it really doesn't. And I don't mean that to disregard my appreciation of voters in the state, because I do. And you look at the ones who got out in Southeast Idaho. Oh my gosh, they had to put on their they had to shovel their car out of snow, first of all, and then have to fight with the issue of maybe no electricity at the school they were going to go vote in. But like I told them, hey, it's paper ballot. You just have to use your pen to mark one name, drop it in the box and leave. So it was pretty easy that way. Am I disappointed? Sure, I would have loved to have had, it was 12% in 2012. They had a 12% turnout. I would have loved to have matched that. 10% is good for a caucus. And the fact that we did have some of these issues says a lot. But Brandon, it could have been 200,000 voters who got to the caucus locations. It still would have been an 85-15. There's not a doubt in my mind that would have been the split. People are that supportive of getting Trump back into office to secure our borders and do away with this Bidenomics. I am telling you, those are the top two issues, and that is what got the people out in Southeast Idaho, was the fact they were going to vote for him one way or the other. So if this was to happen again, so let's say I'm chair in 4 years, if I can take the punishment that long. I would if the Republican Party, so no matter what the state does, they cannot force the Republican Party to bend to their will. This is, we're picking our quarterback. We're picking our guy or gal. And if in 4 years we see some of the same things playing out up in the Capitol, where they're playing, you know, why are we changing election dates that people are so familiar with? Familiarity really helps turnout. In fact, a lot of our venues, we said, hey, you guys try to get them where they normally vote if you can. If not, if you have to have it at one location, that's fine, but just advertise it. And they did. And we put out tons of social media posts. We did a lot on advertising it. But, you know, when we get there in 4 years, I guess we'll see what happens. But see, this year, they ran two bills. So the Senate, remember, they wanted it in May. Brandon, there was a bill to put it on the May ballot this year, to do an emergency clause to put it on the ballot. Are you insinuating that Idahoans are ignorant of the fact that Donald Trump is already our presumptive candidate?
Well,
Why would
and
you
I
do
know
that?
it, despite, every 4 years we're going to have different candidates. I know Idaho has pushed for many years to get that date moved up sooner to have
Sure.
more of a say in the whole
Yes.
process. Would you advocate for a national primary day where every state votes on the same day?
Actually, no. I wouldn't, because I think the enthusiasm that gets sparked in individual states, I mean, we are definitely, well, we're supposed to be a very red state. Sadly, we're not, based on some of the things that happened in the legislature. But most people at heart in this state, most of the refugees that have moved here from California, Washington, Oregon, these are people who have seen what's happened to their state, and they want to keep it red. There is a lot of enthusiasm when it comes to Trump, but we're a given. I mean, we're going to go for Trump no matter what. I mean, seriously, I think people are just that supportive of his border policies and his economic policies. But, you know, these other states, sometimes they need a little bit more of a nudge. And if they're earlier, like Iowa will always be the first state, which is interesting because they've been doing it for a very, very long time. And they have 99 counties that all these candidates went around and visited, unlike our 44, but geographically, we're much larger. So it's pretty interesting. And I think every state has different issues. So we don't all have the same issues. And that's what we need to highlight to the candidates when they come and visit. So, no, I wouldn't go for a one national day. I think this is, again, a party's individual right as a group, an association, to do what we want to do and not have the government, federal or state, tell us what to do.
Yeah, that's a good segue into the next question, is about the push to have open primaries in Idaho. The Idahoans for Open Primaries organization is one of a few who are doing the signature drive, and they think they've got the signatures to put it on the ballot. They've got a 2 more weeks to get it done. How do you characterize open primaries and why?
So as far as open primaries, that is the tool to get people to vote. And again, that is what they're selling this entire initiative on. But the real devil is in the details. When you get to the last page, page 17 or 18, that's where they discuss ranked choice voting. Ranked choice voting is a Democrat voting scheme. And I repeat, scheme. Let's put diabolical in there too, a diabolical scheme to confuse the voters by ranking candidates. So let's say for president, you had Trump and you had Chris Christie and you had Biden. Let's say there were three names. Now you have to rank them. So even though I would never in a million years vote for Biden, I now have to put him down as one, two, or three. If then whoever has the lowest vote total, so let's say Chris Christie had the lowest vote total, he's taken out of the lineup, and then his votes are now going to that those people who voted for Christie for number one, his number two choice. Now they're going to weed those out and give some Trump and some to Biden. And then Biden wins because he gets the 50% plus one or a majority that now carries him into the presidency. So that is the problem with ranked choice voting. That was a very simplistic explanation of how it works. Another way I've explained it is, let's take four universities. Let's decide who our favorite university is. There we have BYU Idaho. We have BS, we have the University of Idaho Moscow, and we have ISU. Okay, four of them. And now we're going to decide what is the best college or university in this state. And so let's see, ISU, they're number four. They're the fourth one, so they're going to fall off. So number four falls off. Then their votes go to the other three universities. BSU is number one currently, and they're at 48%. Excuse me, I'm so sorry, at 48%. But then ISU, they don't want BSU to win, so they're going to give it to BYU, and they're going to give it to the University of Idaho in Moscow. So then what happens? They're still not a 50 plus 1%. The third choice, so BYU is going, well, no way in heck are we going to let BSU have it, because our names are too similar, and we don't like the Palomino on the blue turf. So they're going to give their votes to Moscow. And then Moscow winds up being the favorite university. So where it's always been for almost 250 years in this country, one man, one vote, not anymore. And try to audit this process. To audit this ranked choice voting scheme, it can't be done. You would have years going through large populated areas to figure out what was the real intent. And what if they put down, let's say on this example of the universities, let's just say all of my kids, my entire family, they all went to Moscow. And by golly, I'm putting down University of Idaho across the board four times. That'll throw your ballot out. If you leave any of them blank, because there's just no way in the heck you can vote for the Idaho State University because you failed classes there or something. Guess what? It'll throw it out. So there's different mechanisms, and it's different in every state, but these are some of the mechanisms that can throw out your ballot. But to audit it is the most difficult part. So the idea of the open primary, which they aren't even supposed to be using that terminology. If anybody remembered the Supreme Court decision that came out about the initiative, they weren't supposed to use term open primary, and they continue to do so because they're not being truthful. The real issue here is to bring ranked choice voting into Idaho. And the party has sent out, declined to sign palm cards. We've put out over 120,000 of those starting about 6 months ago. So on top of the caucus, we're also fighting ranked choice voting concurrently. And then we now have some new don't vote for the initiative because of ranked choice voting. People do not like ranked choice voting, but this is the part that Reclaim Idaho is not being honest about. And that's what has us, you know, kind of anxious to get more of these POM cards out. We have 150,000 that have already been ordered of the new cards. 100,000 have gone out. And as candidates for legislature or precinct committee people take those out door to door, it's just going to help us get the messaging out there.
Yeah. Let's move on to just a couple more things. I know you've got to go. Some of the big things that you mentioned from the legislature, some things that you're unhappy about. You mentioned the library bill a couple times. Tell me why that one was so important for the Republican Party to pass and what you think that means for libraries and patrons of libraries.
Well, I'll tell you, that's been an issue even when I was in the legislature. So that's almost 8 years ago when I started. And I remember Barbara Ehart, representative from Idaho Falls. She and I felt very strongly about it. We met with the library boards, state library board. We met with librarians. And that's when they were just putting everything to where you could access it online. So there was a portal that you could access any material. So who's on the other side of that portal and who's accessing those materials? So that was a real issue with both Representative Ehart and myself. Ehart continued to run with that ball. That's funny because she's a basketball coach, but anyhow, she continued to run with that ball. And everybody has been very supportive of getting these materials out of the hands of our young people. And, you know, it's just the sexualization of our kiddos. It's over the top. And, you know, even since I was a legislature, that it has changed dramatically in the past few years. I mean, it is just blatantly determine what sex you want to be. Are you really a boy? Are you really a girl? At very young ages, you can be what you want to be. And then to actually have, you know, these books out there promoting it, and then kids being confused and going home, and then parents trying to get involved in the schools. And then you can't even go to a school board meeting without being called a domestic terrorist because you're worried about what your kid's being exposed to. The idea, this library bill was pretty watered down. It takes them, puts them on a different shelf. If you have a tall second grader, I guess, you know, we got an issue, but the idea is to keep these books out of the hands of these kiddos. And, you know, most librarians are great. Most of them are great. But there are some who are relentless on making sure you have the freedom to look at any book you want. Well, that's kind of what a parent's for. Parents should be helping their kids pick the materials that are good for them socially, emotionally, where they're at, you know, in their grade or their age. So I don't know. It's good to get it through. A lot of people were holding their breath as to whether or not the governor would sign it, and he did. So that was one I think a lot of people were really proud to see finally get moved through.
Yeah. What other bills or during the legislature are you proud of that passed or are worried that passed?
I think the other good one I really liked, Tina Lambert, she brought an election bill through. A lot of these, I know Mike Moyle, the Speaker of the House, the ballot harvesting, you know, we have a problem with that still. I've actually heard some people complaining about at a senior citizen facility. I mean, nursing care facility. There's somebody who already said, I'll just take them in and have them sign them. And, you know, we'll ask them, you know, how they want to vote. Well, that's kind of suspicious. It should be family who take those ballots around. You know, there's a lot of federal funding to a lot of these facilities. There's, you know, might be a certain sway politically. So it should really be the family members who do that. And a lot of people, they don't even have the mental capacity to even be looking at a ballot. And so how this is the kind of electioneering we don't want to see happen in this state. Now, with me, I live in the middle of nowhere in the east of Stanley up the Yankee Fork. We live off grid and our mailbox is 13 miles from our house. So we, you know, we try to vote in person in Stanley, but since I am in this position, I'm up here in Boise, especially around election time, because we're having an election watch party in May on May 21st up here in Boise. So I will get my ballot. I'll go do early voting or I'll receive my ballot absentee, but I'd never put it in the mailbox because people can go around to these rural mailboxes and pull those out. So I always hand deliver my ballots to the courthouse 60 miles away. So people just need to do their due diligence to make sure that the people voting are voting. And these are some of the bills that were addressed, which I'm excited about, because election integrity, it's not been fixed. There's still election issues out there, maybe not so bad here in Idaho, but when they see that there's an opening, believe me, the Democrats are going to make their move.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Chairwoman, for spending some time with me and talking about the legislature and some other things that are happening with the Idaho GOP. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome.